Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k. Welcome, everybody. My name is Lauren Wells, and I am here with my co-host, Chris Seveny, and our special guest of today, Derek Long. Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast, where each week we bring you education and information that will help you take your next step in building wealth through real estate. So on today's episode, like I mentioned, we have Derek from Quest Trust with us. And wanted to bring on Derek to talk about self-directed IRAs. So why, what they are, who needs it, who doesn't need it, and how you can invest with them.
Well, Lauren, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. You know I've done business with you guys for a long time now. So I love your guys' members and your teams, and I love seeing their investments come through with their IRAs. So I'm excited to be here on your platform.
Awesome. You know, I was thinking, I speak with a lot of people who are always asking about different ways to invest and tax ramifications and self-directed IRAs. It's either you know what it is or you don't know what it is kind of what I'm finding. And that's not my area of expertise. I know what it is. So I'm in the know. I'm on the cool kids club right now. But for people that don't know, you know, I thought it would be good to have an episode kind of talking about it. And then when I thought about Chris and I speaking about it, I was like, well, we should probably bring someone on who this is what they do. So I thought about you and figured we would let you explain. So I will kind of, I guess, ask you some questions that I hear often.
Sure, sure. So, absolutely.
Well, if you want to intro yourself first, like, yeah, tell us a little bit about you.
And so for starters, like Lauren was saying, I do represent Quest Trust Company. We are a self-directed IRA provider, but everything that me, Lauren, and Chris could be talking about applies to every self-directed custodian out there. So you can take this information straight to whoever you're already working with. You want to work with me, great, but this is just really info for everybody.
Yeah. So I guess a question I get a lot is, what's a custodian?
Yeah. So the custodians are Fidelity, Charles Schwab, Merrill Lynch, right? Those are probably the ones that people really know about a lot. Vanguard, someone that holds your money and does investments for you, but doesn't actually give you a checking account or a savings account, doesn't give you that debit card, right? So Quest, we are a custodian, just like a Fidelity, a self-directed custodian is the same thing. So it's just changing the bank.
Do you have to have any special like requirements to be a custodian? Like, you know, I think to tag along with that, people ask, is like their money FDI insured or stuff like that? Just curious if there's any other implications with, I'm guessing like nobody can just turn around and say, hey, I'm going to just go be a custodian.
So the answer is yes and no. Now at Quest, we are one of those custodians that we have full FDIC insurance for everyone out there. But what's unique is a lot of times these custodians that they can pop up, what they did is they bought a franchise. Well, if they separate from the franchise, which you can do, they may not fall into those same type of regulations because they're not as holding as much cash or assets under management. Mm-hmm. Because of that, certain ones out there may not have full FDIC insurances, but any of the big ones, right, the ones that you've heard of, whether it is Quest or Equity Trust or Directed IRA or Kingdom Trust or something like that, all of us do have full FDIC insurance and we are highly regulated. As a matter of fact, most of us get audited 5 times a year.
Wow.
Which is insane. So
we have the Regulation A offering only twice a year. We get financials. So yeah, that's a lot. And you just like led me down a rabbit hole of, wow, we probably need to do a whole nother episode on like things to look at when you're looking at a custodian. So good to know. So can you explain what is a self-directed IRA?
So I get this question all the time. And it's really funny. They're made up. They're fake. It doesn't matter. You can look everywhere you want in the IRS tax code, which it actually falls under IRS publication 401, little a or big A, depending on which type of IRA you're looking at. But the term self-directed, you'll not find in there. What it's supposed to represent is a marketing term. Hey, when you move an IRA over to a company like Quest, what we're going to do is we're going to let you take your IRA and invest in what we call private assets, not public. So most self-directed custodians will not allow you to do public assets. That's the stocks, the bonds, the CDs, the mutual funds. Mm-hmm. That's what Fidelity's for. Mm-hmm. At Quest, we will only let you do things that are real estate related. Just like for you guys, right? A lot of our clients will use it to buy, you know, those non-performing notes or the discounted notes or some of those just being the lender instead, right? And that's what they work with you for. So notice they use us to use their IRA for the notes, but they use Fidelity to buy something like Apple stock. Notice there's not one that's better than the other. They're just different. When I want to buy Apple stock, I have to go to the non-self-directed custodian. When I want to buy a note, I have to go to the self-directed side. So when you hear the term, it's honestly made up. It's not a legal term. We use it more for marketing purposes.
Okay.
So if somebody wanted to set up an account, I guess, at Fidelity versus Quest, I'm guessing mm-hmm. it's probably almost the same process. It's just a matter of, it's really where you're looking to invest your money is, I think, how I understood that, if that's correct.
Exactly. So it is, not only is it similar to the same process, it's the exact same process. Right? It's an application with any custodians, could be your name, social, date of birth, who inherits the account when you pass away, and a signature. Like, you're good to go. Anyone can set you up a self-directed IRA or just a normal IRA to buy your mutual funds or stocks.
So when you're out of college or a few years out of college, whatever, working for an employer, do they offer?
Not typically. So a lot of times when we get a job, right, our employers will offer us incentives. You know, like, hey, look, if we're going to give you a 401k, it might be a 403b or a pension plan or a TSP mm-hmm. or something like that. Well, employers give you these because the employer gets a lot, and I do mean a ton, of tax deductions for offering these to their employees. So because of this reason, they have to hold that typically at a public style company, a Fidelity, a Charles Schwab, right? The company itself is not going to be investing your money. Fidelity is. So most of us, go ahead.
Oh no. And you're still not, like, on to that point, even if it's, you know, by Fidelity or Charles Schwab, you're not getting to direct what you're investing in if a company holds it, correct?
You don't, right? When I set up my 401k, right? Even, and I have a 401k here at Quest, but I don't get to self-direct my own 401k. Why is that? Well, it's because it's held to the company. The company's actually the one investing it. Now, they might ask me some questions like, oh, do I have a high risk tolerance or a low risk tolerance? Or am I kind of moderate? Something basic, but I'm not really choosing my investments, right? It gets put into those Fortune 500 stocks or maybe a big hedge fund or something like that. That being said, when you leave your job, have separation of service, or just get old enough to, you know, actually retire, now we can take that 401k and move it to an IRA. Anytime you have the ability to do this, you want to do it. Even if you're just switching jobs. The main reason why it comes down to an IRA, I have more control. The 401k is controlled by the company. The IRA is controlled by the individual.
So it's interesting.
That was a question I was going to ask. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was going to jump in because I've switched jobs in the past. And when you switch, they only tell you have two options. Mm-hmm. They forget to include option number three, which you just said. The two options I've always been told is, one, leave it at that company. Mm-hmm. Or two, move it to your new company. Never, ever, ever has anybody said, oh, you could also turn this to an IRA, which then you could put at Quest and go buy a single family rental if you wanted to. Or invest in a mortgage note.
Yeah. You know, what's really sad is, you know why they never tell you that? Most of the time, the person on the phone doesn't know those options. It's really sad that a lot of people, mm-hmm. when we talk about this space, it's very limited information out there. So you usually want an expert, someone like me, someone that has actually gone to school and has certifications from the IRS and the banking commissions with it. But how many people out there have that, you know? And so usually you're dealing with someone that gets 10, 15 bucks an hour on the phone and they're reading from a script. You know, they're like, oh, you can do this one or this one.
Well, it's they're getting the information from Fidelity, who's probably also administering the plans at both companies. So it's, you know, they just want to keep the money in house.
Yeah.
So you said if you're switching jobs, but here's another question. What if you're, you know, first job, first 401k, would you also, or would you do the company 401k? Is there a better option? Do the company or a self-directed? Does it?
So I love this question because really, if you can afford it, you should do both, right? People don't realize how powerful a retirement account is, whether it is a 401k or an IRA. Did you guys know that your retirement account is labeled by the IRS a tax-exempt entity? It files the same tax return a church would. This is how the IRS views it. So if I can set up a 401k with my company, or I can set up a personal IRA and I can do some investments with it, I get to avoid all of the taxes today. This is why it's so powerful. Is normally if you do an investment, the IRS says, well, you are a taxable entity. You set up an LLC, the LLC is taxable, your C corp, your S corp, your trust. But the retirement account is truly labeled as non-taxable. So if you can afford to set up both, please do so. Set up an IRA and set up a 401k, you know, through your company. A lot of times, though, unfortunately, especially for the younger generation, they can't afford to do that, right? They're living off 20, 25 bucks an hour. Well, if $5 an hour is going towards their 401k, they can't put another $5 into the IRA. They just can't afford it. So I'd love to see them do it, you know, but it's not as practical. As we get older, we make more money. We're also more interested in saving and not just, you know, beer and party.
That's awesome. One thing you say, you use the words, and we should maybe should have covered this in the beginning, use the words IRA and 401k. Can you use those interchangeably? Can you explain to me the difference between the two for someone who's newer, again, maybe right out of college, few years into their first job? So, I feel like those terms are just kind of thrown around. And how do you differentiate? What's the difference between the two?
So the biggest difference comes down to who can control the account. A 401k is tied to an employer. Therefore, the employer is the one that controls the account. They control the investments. They control how much you can contribute, how much they contribute. They control everything on it. Whereas an IRA stands for individual retirement account. So an individual has control. Now, knowing this, a lot of times, though, what ends up happening is the IRA, you can't contribute as much. I can only put in $6,000 or $7,000 a year, depending on my age. Whereas the 401k, you can actually put in up to $61,000 a year. So there's a huge advantage on both sides. So if I'm brand new, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to start saving money for in my retirement account. I want to use it to start looking at buying some notes, buying some distressed properties, looking at some rentals. Well, that IRA, that $7,000, $6,000, that's not going to go very far, you know? And that could be really difficult to utilize. So it might take you 2 or 3 years before you want to move it over to a self-directed custodian.
Got it. So can you explain the limits, the contribution limits for,
So,
is there a difference? Do they kind of, is it across both of them that you can contribute a certain amount? Kind of how does that work?
So I put retirement accounts into three categories. One, what I label as individual retirement accounts. This is going to be your traditional and Roth IRAs. All right, traditional IRAs are more popular with the older generation. Roth IRAs are more popular with the younger generation.
See, you're on that like
I'm in the edge. Middle. I'm not you're off on that edge. Middle child. Well, right I'm now.
You know, I didn't even realize like Roth was around. We'll talk about Roth later on and stuff, but we'll let
Derek keep going. You got to remember, I'm a nerd. Okay, the Roth IRA was created in 1997. All right. So it wasn't even around pre that. Like I was in junior high at that point in time. Right. Mm-hmm. I was getting ready to go to high school. Well, you got to think about it. In 1997, how my parents, they didn't know about a Roth. They didn't know anything about that. And that's the generation right now that is there to at the retirement age. So knowing that they didn't, a lot of people don't know about the Roth IRA. But the contribution limits, like I said, sorry, I got off topic. We break it down to individual accounts first, traditional and Roth. Mm-hmm. As an individual, I can only contribute $6,000 under 50, $7,000 over 50. That's it. The next category, we have what I call employer plans. These could be 401ks, 403bs, SEP IRAs, simple IRAs. There's all sorts of ones out there. TSPs, if you're in the military, 457s, if you work for the government. Like there's all sorts of different plans, but they all say you can still contribute the same amount. That's $1,000 a year. Now, the reason it's so high is two people get to contribute. One person is the employer, right? The company I work for. The other person is the employee. So when you combine both of these, that can't exceed $61,000. Now, notice because I put them in different categories, I can max out my Roth IRA contributions. I can max out my 401k contributions. And then you have some specialty accounts that are really weird that a lot of people will utilize, like a health savings account or an education account for college. But we won't dive into those. But
yeah,
that's why I break them up in three categories.
In most companies, an individual for, I think, a 401k can contribute close, roughly like $20,000, I believe. And then the companies can contribute to less. Most companies that I've worked with in the past typically might contribute like 3-5% of, or max like 50-50. But it's still, if you can put in 18,000 versus six with an IRA, it's still, a powerful vehicle to invest in. And that's one of the reasons why we, with our Regulation A Plus fund that we launched, we had a low minimum. We have a $500 minimum in there because if somebody's just getting started with an IRA and have $6,000, it's very difficult to get into real estate with $6,000. You might be able to buy a partial maybe or, a sketchy note possibly. But if you can invest in a large pool and get a decent return, it was one of the areas that we looked at because we thought there was a lot of people I've spoken with in the past, we're just getting started with IRAs and like, what can I do with this? And I'd be like, I kind of can't help you right now. But Lauren and I kind of figured that out a little bit.
Awesome.
Yeah. Good little plug there.
Ah, boom.
I need to get it in somewhere. So
good job. So here's the question. Oh, shoot. This always happens. I like have a good question and then Chris gets going and I lose it.
I have one. Just
yeah, I go.
Can you,
too.
Again, there's a lot of people are just hearing sometimes for IRAs, the first time. We throw out Roth, we throw out traditional. Can you just explain briefly the differences between the two?
Yeah, it all comes down to how the earnings come back to the retirement account. So the traditional IRA, once again, it's more popular, grows tax deferred, meaning I get to defer my taxes until I'm old. Great way to look at it. So if I have $100,000 today, right? I'm 36 years old. So at 36, I can defer any taxes on this money until I'm 72. The IRS says though, hey, at 72, you're getting old. You're going to kick the bucket soon. And they make you pull the money out. If you think I'm lying, they give you a death chart. They have a chart for every single one of us that says when you're going to die, right? They now make you pull out that money that you just grew, all right, in certain increments and pay your taxes, right? They know, hey, look, we're estimating that you should be passing away here. So now you've got to take out that money because we want to get paid. Mm-hmm. Now, in my example, if I take $100,000 today at 36 years old and I grow it to the age of 72, let's just say I grew it to $1 million. That's really not unrealistic. I got almost 40 years to do this. And especially in notes and real estate, that's pretty easy to do. Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm in a 20% bracket, I owe $200,000 in taxes. This is the traditional IRA. This is the account that grows tax deferred. This is the number one account that people have. But the Roth IRA is the reverse of this. The Roth IRA is the one that everyone says truly grows tax-free. I'm going to take that same $100,000. I'm going to take that money, pay taxes on it right now. I take that $100,000, I move it in my Roth IRA. Let's overestimate your tax bracket. Let's call it 40%. There's not even a 40% bracket, but we're going to call it that. Mm-hmm. You owe $40,000 in taxes. But now that $100,000 truly grows tax-free. Mm-hmm. You never owe taxes again, mm-hmm. ever. Not even, and it's not just for your life. It's for mm-hmm. the life of your heirs. Okay.
Basically, pay now or pay later, essentially.
Right. But there's a big problem with my story, and there's a reason everyone uses the traditional. What do you think the problem was? Did you catch it by chance? I gave you a $40,000 tax bill.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
Most people are like, dude, I don't want to pay that. So what am I going to do? I'm going to kick it down the road. Right. I'm going to defer it. I'm going to push it down. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll do it next year. Well, that $100,000 didn't stay $100,000, did it? It grew. Mm-hmm. It grew to 110, 120. Well, now instead of 40,000, you owe 50,000. Well, I'll wait till next year. Well, that 120 grew to 150 or 170, and it just keeps going. And eventually people never do it.
So let me ask you, do you have a traditional or a Roth?
Me, I have a Roth. So I work in this space. It would be crazy if I didn't have a Roth or leverage a Roth. So I do 99% of all of my investing inside a Roth IRA. I do have a SEP IRA because I do have some self-employed income. Mm-hmm. But anytime mm-hmm. we make a contribution to it, we immediately do a conversion.
Okay. So, Lauren, what do you have?
What do you mean? I have a traditional.
Okay.
I have a traditional. We did, Chris and I did met with someone who kind of analyzes all of the different custodians and mm-hmm. options for you and what you're looking to do, invest in, you know. And we asked him this. We asked him, do you remember this, Chris? We asked him which one makes more in the end? And he was like, honestly, they've done research on this and they've done like kind of, I don't know what you would call it when
like
mapped it out. Yeah. And they actually being pretty equal because you can grow, you're putting more money in because you're growing it. So you're able to grow it more, even though then at the end you're paying more taxes. And the other one you might grow slower, but you're not having to pay taxes. So kind of, he's like, they kind of equal out.
So what's really sad is he goes off a interest rate of in between 4% and 6% rate of earnings. Yeah. And this is very common. And the numbers that your financial advisor stuff went through is 100% correct when we're looking at what would be considered public assets, stocks, mutual funds, bonds, CDs, watch the market go up and down. Mm-hmm. Most real estate investors, though, if you told them, oh, we'll pay you 6% on an annual basis, they're going to laugh in your face. So what happens when we increase that number to 8, 10, 12%? Mm-hmm. Then you'll see the big shift. And this is also one of those things, too, is for our industry, the Roth IRA makes so much sense for any type of real estate investor. Mm-hmm. But most of the US, man, they're not doing real estate deals. They're not trying to be, you know, savvy investors. We all say we want to be wealthy and we all want to do these and take these steps, but a lot of times it's tough, you know? And that's something that a lot of times people will never take that leap and do. And that's very common. My grandma, too, there's another side of it. My grandma is right now 87 or 88 years old. Mm-hmm. She will never do a Roth conversion. Do you know why? She says, I'll be dead before I spend this money. You deal with the taxes.
So to give people an idea, because we're talking about IRAs and, you know, people may or may not heard of them. You know, what is the overall amount of money in IRAs? Is there a number, you know, that people have stuck in IRAs?
Yeah. So if we think across the board and just a US number worldwide, right? US wide. It comes out to be somewhere between $24 and $25 trillion.
Wow.
Right. Americans, the majority of their money is sitting in their retirement accounts. And just if you're out there and you're listening to this, think of you as an individual. Do you have more money in your checking account or more money in that 401k or IRA that you've been shoveling money away in for years and years and years?
Yeah.
So this is also why sometimes I think it's sad as people, they go, wow, I really like this investment. Lauren was walking me through all these things, but I don't have the capital to do it. You probably do. You just need to think outside the box a little bit. Realize that you can use those 401ks. You can use those IRAs to buy that property, to do those notes. And once you realize that, that's where the biggest change starts to happen.
Yeah. So that's actually what prompted this episode was I was talking to someone who is about to retire, close to retirement, and he has money with, it wasn't Charles Schwab, but it was someone like along those lines. And he was looking to invest. He was interested in the fund, but he's like, oh, I would have to liquidate my traditional account. And I was like, this is where I was like, oh, I want to talk to you all about self-directed IRAs and why you should be doing this. And you do have the cash, but you just don't have it in a vehicle that allows you to invest in this type of asset. So, or in anything, but whatever Fidelity wants to invest in.
So could somebody take money from Fidelity? Let's say I had $100,000 at Fidelity and all of a sudden I was like, wait, I want to invest something in real estate. Could they transfer from Fidelity to open an account at like a Quest and transfer money between two IRAs?
And to top on that, can they transfer less than the whole thing? Could I say take 100 of that 150 and put it in a self-directed account?
Absolutely, you can. And this should hold true for any custodian out there. So obviously, guys, remember, I work for Quest, so I talk about them. But everything we're talking about holds true for any self-directed custodian out there. Is first off, you can always transfer cash from a Fidelity, a Vanguard, Charles Schwab, wherever it is, over to an IRA at a self-directed custodian. All you're doing is changing the bank. Bank A lets you invest here and Bank B lets you invest here. So if you just want to change your investments, absolutely change that cash over. This also means though, and Lauren just said it, you don't need to move over the full balance. I think that's always a common misconception. If I'm looking to buy right now a note from you guys, or I'm looking to purchase a property or just invest into your fund, I say, hey, Lauren, I want to go ahead and put in $20,000 into this fund. Well, guess what? I transfer over $20,000 and that's what I'm going to utilize. Mm-hmm. So it's very simple.
How hard is that process? Because I think the next question is, shoot, it's already sitting there. Like, do I want to go through the process and hassle to get it to the other custodian and the paperwork? Is it a headache? What is that process?
So if you have a good custodian, they should make it simple on you, right? They should help you fill out any paperwork that might need to come into play. I think the hardest thing to do is, unfortunately, is when you have to call that Charles Schwab or that Vanguard or whatever, and to say, hey, I want to sell those stocks. Because you know what's hard? It's not saying sell the stocks. It's one for this, wait on hold, two for this, press five for that, press zero 10 times. I just want to talk to someone live. Oh, they hung up on me. Those like, and that happens all the time.
That's me. I'm like 0000000. Just get me to a real person.
Please, right? That's the hardest thing about it. Now, for the most part, though, the overall process is easy. What I would like to talk about is how to go through the investment, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Could I ask one more question?
Yeah.
What does the timeline look like? So if tomorrow I had funds I wanted to move over and get set up, how long before I can utilize those funds to invest in a property or an asset or a fund?
When it comes to actually setting up the account, most custodians usually will do this in 24 to 48 hours. That's what Quest sticks to when it sets up the account.
Okay.
Now, once the account is set up by banking regulations, you can't do an investment for the first 7 days. They give you what they call a rescission period. Mm-hmm. All right. So the account actually has to be open and established for 7 days before it's allowed to buy anything. That holds true no matter where you go. After that 7 days, though, it should be good to go to do an investment. So at Quest, our goal is to set up the account. During that 7-day rescission period, go through those investment documents and request the funds from Charles Schwab, Fidelity, Vanguard, et cetera. If they're in an IRA, typically it's going to take 3 to 4 days to transfer the cash over. If they're in a 401k, though, give yourself about 2 weeks. 401ks, 403bs, for whatever reason, the IRS has not caught up on this and the Department of Labor hasn't caught up with this, but they only allow them to send a check. That means you have to wait on the mail and typically a check hold from the bank.
Yeah, we just went through this with my husband transferring his old employer's 401k to a solo checkbook control 401k. Mm-hmm. And it was like, everything was great. And then we had to wait on, I think it was Fidelity, like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing? Who uses checks anymore?
But it's still, I mean, 2 weeks still isn't that.
It's not that bad.
So it's not, you're not waiting 6 months. You're maybe waiting 3. If you're
want to go on like a worst case scenario, you're talking a three week time frame. So give yourself 7 days to 3 weeks, somewhere between there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you were going to talk about, say someone, I get off the phone with someone, they have the self-directed IRA and they want to invest in our fund. Like, what does that process look like on their end?
Well, so as far as when it comes through the investment, understand when someone sets up a self-directed IRA, that IRA really is its own entity. That IRA will have its own name, its own address, its tax ID number, even its own level of asset protection. So as an investor, I'm not going to go through anything different. I'm still going to fill out the same paperwork I would. I just, instead of me putting Derek Long on there, I'll put my retirement account's name on there. It's not my address. It's my retirement account's address. But this is also where I see a lot of people make mistakes. And I think your guys' group does a great job of this. And so for those of you guys who don't know, before Lauren even launched any funds or was selling notes, you sat down with me and you said, hey, Derek, I want to make sure it's easy on my investors. And you went through the motion of making sure that we could set up a good portal to where they could type in the right things, click the right buttons. And what's really sad is a lot of people won't do that. A lot of syndicators or people selling notes or even people that just have funds won't take that extra step before they even reach out to their clients. And I think you guys did such a great job of that, that that's something that people should be looking for with their IRAs is, all right, if I'm going to use an IRA, does this person understand what I'm going through? Do they know the process? And with you guys, you made it real simple for them.
And we've also picked up, like, you know, because people fill out W-9s and they'll fill it out and put their social security number when they invest with an IRA. And, you know, we've, you know, been through that enough to be like, no, don't do this because my CPA is going to see that and all of a sudden send you a, you know, an interest statement for based on your social, you know, you need to make sure you have all your IRAs information. Please talk to your custodian. And I think I have Quest's EIN number memorized by now. So, but.
And that's so true. Remember guys, your IRA is a tax exempt entity. So if you are a taxable entity, if you put your social, you receive the profit, you pay your taxes. If you put the IRA's number, no taxes. So big difference.
So when it comes to fees, like how do custodians make their money?
So any self-directed custodian makes their monies on the fees. So this is where you want to make sure you have a good custodian that's not charging too much or too little or anything like that. Some custodians out there are really cheap, but they charge you the fees up front. What this means is you are not on the, they're not on the same side as the investor. Imagine for a moment right now, Lauren, that you sent a client over to me and before I ever started the investment paperwork with them, we already charged them their transaction fees, right? Well, what is my incentive as a custodian to get that deal funded? There isn't one. So Quest, what we do is we charge our fees after the deal is funded, right? So this puts us in the same boat as the client. However, I am going to let people know that Quest, we're definitely not the cheapest. You can find a lot of cheaper custodians out there than us, but we don't want to be. We do things to try our best to make sure that we're giving you a better level of customer service. We don't want to be Walmart. With that being said, we do things like have a non-automated line, right? You call, someone answers. And Lauren, you just did this earlier to me today, but you called out. I was just on the other line. As soon as I hung up the phone, I could call you right back.
I know. Every time someone answers and I'm always, you know, directed or either, you know, oh, they're in a meeting, they'll give you a call back. But yeah, there's no press one, press two, pound, enter your account number, none of that. Yep. Awesome.
So that's just one of those minor things that we try our best to do to make sure that we can provide some good customer service. So don't always shop around for the best fees. At the same time, your fees should never be making or breaking an investment decision. We charge you $125 to do a deal. Now, this brings into something you guys mentioned earlier, whereas, man, I only have $500. If I only have $500 to put in this, it might not make sense to use the self-directed custodian because the fees could eat away at that. So you do want to make sure that you understand, you know, there has to be some sort of balance. Make sure your custodian is very upfront with you. Now, if you only have $500, there are additional things you can do to minimize the fees. And one of them comes into what I label as a partnering aspect. I actually, just how I got started in IRA investing was my dad would invest, call it $98,000 into a deal. $2,000 though would come from my IRA. Well, what that means is the fees are the same. It's still only $125, but my dad covered the fee and I was able to get my $2,000 working. You know, so you can do a lot of creative things, and we teach classes on that as well.
Yeah, that's one of the things that with Quest, the amount of education that your firm provides is, I haven't seen any other custodians provide to that level of education. And when, you know, we as sponsors have worked with a lot of other custodians, and some of them, if I just see the name, I just start cringing because I'm like, oh, and then, like we had a deal and I won't, of course, name names.
Yeah, like, yeah, we don't have to mention their names, yeah, but I had a deal
that we needed to fund this deal like in 2 weeks. And the person said, oh, I use XYZ. And I was like, never going to happen. And I'm like, I'm just telling you, I have dealt with them and periodically, and I can just tell you, you'll fill out the paperwork. They'll tell you everything's good. Then it will go to somebody else. And you could, if you had the same deal twice, you get two different answers. One may fund it, but somebody else won't. And it's the same paperwork. And they're like, oh, now you need this form or now you need that form. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you can never get a human on the phone either. And so I do have to, you know, give kudos to Quest. Like Lauren, you know, when she has a question, literally picks up the phone. It's like, oh yeah, I talked to Derek. And I'm like, you talked to Derek more than you talked to me, I think. So
One thing that I think is unique and what's sad is, unfortunately, where those problems are coming from on the other custodian sides comes down to it's educating the staff. Quincy and Nathan, our CEO and our president, are really big on our staff actually doing real investments. You can't read a book on how to fix a car, right? And then think you're the best at fixing a car. Man, go fix the car. That's the best way to learn. So just like me, as an example, right now I own 7 promissory notes. I have 2 oil and gas investments and 2 rental properties. Now, not all of that's in my IRA, but the 7 notes are and the 2 oil and gas investments. The rental properties are outside of the IRA. But that being said, what this does, it gives me knowledge of what my clients are going through. The first time you have to work with a title company and walk them through how to draft up their own documents, you just, oh my God, you know? And until you experience it, you don't know what the client's truly going through. And I think that's where our staff has a big advantage. There's a lot of us, more than 70% of us, do our own investments.
That's awesome. So
one thing, you know, I guess is we wanted to just touch on, is there ever a reason why an IRA is not right for somebody?
Absolutely. So my mom should never use a true self-directed IRA. All right. This is because, unfortunately, some people out there, they get sold on something. And self-directed IRAs can be very dangerous because what ends up happening is option one, I can go to Fidelity. I talk to a qualified Fidelity rep and say, hey, I have no clue what I'm doing. Great. We're going to put you in Fortune 500 stocks and we're just going to ignore you. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, you'll watch your account fluctuate up and down, but no one stole your money. Mm-hmm. On the self-directed side, what can happen, what has happened multiple times, is someone, right, that same person, and this would be my mom, goes to some place and meets some guy, you know, he's wearing that yellow t-shirt and he's like, oh, I'll pay you 15% on your money. Give me an unsecured note and I'll show you and I promise you I'll pay you back. So my mom goes to the deal, does the note, and guess what? The guy took the money and ran away. Mm-hmm. And I see it all the time. So the people that it's not for are ones that aren't educated. Right. Mm-hmm. Make sure you know who you're working with. Make sure the person that you can call them, you can email them, that you have a chain of reference. You can do some due diligence. That's one of the things I like about your guys' notes is it's all there, right? It's a legal document. It gets filed with the county. There's a deed of trust. There's a mortgage. There's interest rates. There's payments. There's a schedule. Like, that's what I should be looking for when I'm looking for a deal, when I'm looking for where to park my self-directed IRA. So. Yeah.
That's a great point because I've seen horror stories where I had somebody who had invested with me wanted to do, again, try and do it on their own. And they ended up buying a note that was originated for a property in Detroit. They never ran title. They never had somebody go look at the property. They're like, well, this company's a reputable company. Sold me the note. The house literally hadn't had power turned on in like 7 years. And they bought it for, it was like a $50,000 note at 12%. They paid par for it. So they paid 50 grand. I think at foreclosure auction, the house may have sold for like $4,000. So, they lost 46,000, which when you look at, you know, 50,000, you know, now you're down to 4,000 to get that money back will take more than a lifetime, you know, it'll take
insane.
Probably 30 years to get that money back.
Yeah. So you want to make sure you're working with good people that you can talk to consistently. And it's really funny. A lot of times those groups too, you never can get a hold of them, right? That should be a red flag. So
Here's a question. Is there anything I can't invest in with a self-directed IRA?
Oh yeah. Yourself. The biggest thing.
So talk to me about that.
So what's really funny is I always hear people say, well, I want to use my IRA. I'm going to buy a house and live in it. I'm going to use my IRA and lend my business money. I'm going to do, guys, you can't do that. That's not what you're trying to do because that's what they think they're trying to do, but they're really not. Remember, your IRA is its own entity. The IRA does the investment. Therefore, the IRA receives the profit. This is why the IRS allows it to be tax exempt. Now, they're going to give you a true tax exempt entity, something that's going to avoid all the taxes, whether you're doing a fix and flip, a rental, a note, it doesn't matter. But they're going to give you an entity, let you do all your investments and avoid all the taxes. They're going to give you some strict rules that you must follow. And those rules all come down to you as an individual. You can't use your non-taxable entity to invest in yourself, your spouse, your parents, or your kids, or any of their companies. If they catch you, they take it away. So what's really sad is some people, how do I get around this? Give me the rules to go ahead and go through. And guys, there's plenty of ways to hide it. There really is. Set up an LLC, label someone else, go try to just lend yourself some money. I've seen people do it. The problem is if you get audited and the IRS catches you, that's where they're going to take away everything. And that's what's scary. And you can see this actually happen in a most recent court case on, it was ended in November, labeled McNulty versus Commissioner. If you guys want to look it up.
Is this about the gold?
Yeah, so that was part of it, but there was three different parts to the gold.
Okay. I was like, I bet Chris has already researched this. Yeah.
So it was A, where did they store the gold? B, how did they report the gold? And C, what did they do with the gold in between that points in time? Mm-hmm. And between those three factors, there's a lot of fishy things that went on because they were taking their IRA and ultimately benefiting themselves today. Now, remember, guys, that's not what you're trying to do. We can still use that entire retirement account and invest into anything you're looking at. You just can't use your IRA and give it to yourself. You know, I can use an IRA and buy a note. No problem. I can use an IRA and buy a house. No problem. So
just don't live in it.
Yeah, just don't go live in it.
Well, I mean, once you get age where you can take the money out, and this is high level, but if I was 70 years old, had a house that had an IRA, that was a beach house, that was a rental, at that point in time, you basically take it as a like a distribution or something, right?
That's correct. Rent. So, and that's where that Roth really starts to make sense. So imagine you had a $300,000 beach house. You know, that's actually a pretty cheap beach house, but
yeah.
So if you had that beach house in the IRA, in the traditional IRA, what would happen is you take a distribution. The house is now out of the IRA. You own it personally. You can go live in it, stay in it, do whatever you want. But that $300,000 is taxable. Yeah. Whereas if we did that in the Roth IRA, you truly could be 100% tax-free. Here's what's even crazier. If you did that in the Roth IRA and you sold the house, moving forward, not only is it always tax-free, every deal you do forward, 100% tax-free, and you can live off the money. I can do 10 fix and flips a year. None of it's taxable. Own 10 rentals. None of the income's taxable. Don't even have to report it. And I can pull it out and spend it how I see fit.
So essentially, you can't invest in yourself. You can't invest in, I'll call it the vertical familial of your parents or your kids. But you could technically lend to a sister or brother?
Technically. So what the IRS says, they give you a very specific list. They say you, spouse, parents, kids on the surface, right? Or anyone who potentially inherits your wealth. Okay. Now, normally, right, I'm married. So my wife, if I die, I kick the bucket, she inherits the money. I love my sister to death, right? But she doesn't get anything, right? My wife gets it all. So for me, yes, that answer makes sense. But ask me 5 years ago before I was married, right? My sister actually was my beneficiary. So at that point in time, no, I could not use my IRA and lend her money or buy a house and let her live in it because... she's the one who inherits my wealth. So on the surface, it's always we use spouse, parents, kids. It's because that's how wealth gets passed according to the IRS. If you label someone else in that boat, if I labeled Lauren my beneficiary, she's disqualified to me, you know, but very rarely is that the case, right? Like I said, I love my sister, but she ain't getting squat.
What about the new fad of NFTs and crypto? Are either one of those available to be invested in?
So crypto, yes. EFTs, as of right now, no, not directly. But that doesn't mean there's not ways to go about it. So if you do want to invest in one of these unique alternative assets, whether it is crypto or EFTs, you normally want to establish an entity in the middle. Have your IRA. Remember, your IRA is its own person, has its own name. Have the IRA create an LLC, create a trust, something like that. Well, according to your custodian, they'll call the LLC the investment. The LLC can go out and buy that EFT. The LLC can go invest in the crypto at that point in time and set up a wallet. So that's usually the best option to go through. Now, there's some other things in the middle there and some debates on who can hold the checkbook or be the manager. We don't have to get into that, but that's usually the best option. And your custodian can walk you through what it looks like.
Okay. I think I'm trying to think if there are any other common questions I hear when it comes to self-direct. Oh, can you talk to me about checkbook control?
Yeah. Just like self-directed IRAs, remember, self-directed is a marketing term. Checkbook control is also a marketing term.
I feel like that's like top of the top cool kids club. It's like very little people know about self-direct, or like you either know, don't know about self-directed. And then next step is checkbook control.
Is the checkbook. Absolutely. Now, what this means, and exactly what I was just mentioning, is I like to label it as your IRA has a bank account, not tied to the custodian that holds the retirement funds. So how does my IRA set up a bank account outside of Quest or outside of Equity Trust or outside of, you know, Kingdom Trust or who insert your custodian, right? Well, what has to happen is the IRA has to create an entity in the middle. Call it an LLC, a trust. We've seen C corporations as well, you know, but the IRA has to create something in the middle. From there, that if it was an LLC, the LLC obviously can have its own bank account. Now, notice though, the IRA is labeled as the owner, right, of this entity. Now, normally, and you'll see a lot of attorneys, they get used to taking this shortcut. But anytime if my attorney sets up an LLC for me, he labels me as what he calls the managing member, right? Mm-hmm. Well, these are technically two different roles if you actually read through the Schedule A. There is a member labeled as an owner, and a manager, right? Mm-hmm. The manager is the one who is doing exactly what we're calling it, managing it. Mm-hmm. Well, in this specific case, the member must be labeled the IRA. The IRA is the one that set up the LLC. The manager, right, needs to be someone else. Now, there's debate on that topic until the court, the McNulty court case. It started to make a little bit more clear. Some people say you can be the manager. Quest says you have to have that non-disqualified person be the manager. There's different levels, and we can all walk through those type of things. But notice that LLC has its own bank account. Because it has its own bank account, they call it a checkbook control. Now, that term was created in right around 93, 94 during a Swanson versus Commissioner court case, but that was back when checkbooks were legit. Now it's a debit card, guys, right? It's a debit card, but
we still call it checkbook IRA control.
Yeah.
So last question I was going to ask is, I know there's been, you know, a lot of talk in, you know, Congress about, you know, changes to IRS as well as, you know, I mean, IRAs, excuse me. And the IRS, I know, just hired like 80,000 people to start, you know, doing more audits and so forth. Has there been anything recently that's, you know, updated rules, regulations that people should be aware of? Just, absolutely. I know, because it's constantly changing.
Yeah. So here's what's really unique is until 2019, self-directed IRAs were actually almost never mentioned, not once in Congress, right? Not once. And retirement accounts and self-directed IRAs have actually been around since 1974, right? Which is where the ERISA Act came in. Remember, I'm a nerd, right? So what was unique, though, is in 2019 was the very first time we ever heard about this at the Seller Finance Coalition. At this point in time, a lot of people in Congress start to realize the power of these self-directed IRAs. In 2020, another big thing happened where Congress was actually trying to get rid of IRAs doing any type of syndicated style investments, LLC investments, trust investments. I mean, you name it. It was going to pretty much be stocks or mutual funds. We actually had to fight, and I actually had the privilege to speak in front of Congress on 6 occasions during this level, and we got that abolished. Now, the SECURE Act 2.0 came out. And what's unique is Congress is actually finally looking at these in a positive light, right? Right now, if you want to look at the SECURE Act 2.0 and go through sections 101 through sections 386, you'll see 7 different bills in there. And all 7 of them are pro self-directed IRAs, creating more things for the Roth, allowing the IRAs to be more lenient to do real estate style investments. Because it used to be like, man, it was cut and dry. If you did something wrong with your IRA, like I was saying earlier, you would lose the whole thing. And you can see that in the McNulty case. Mm-hmm. But what is unique now is they're trying to be more lenient because real estate can be tricky sometimes, you know? Yeah. So that's what I really like about this. That being said, with them bringing on 80,000+ auditors, and obviously Congress is well aware now of self-directed IRAs, and they are being mentioned so much more, it's not the time to be do something shady. It's not the time to do something where you're playing in that gray area. Because once again, remember, this is most of your money. Usually we have more money in a retirement account than we do our own checking account.
Well, that other stuff, that was like the Peter Thiel rule they were trying to implement essentially, right? Where he made like $6 billion off of PayPal for off of like a minor investment.
Yeah, so Peter Thiel today has $21 billion in a Roth IRA that's 100% tax-free. Congress has no rights. The IRS has no rights to any of that money. It's all tax free, right? So what's funny is I actually fought for that, right? I actually fought for them not to go ahead and go after someone like Peter Thiel, because honestly, at that point in time, that's how the rules were written. Like,
yeah.
You can be mad at him all he wants, but if you were in his position, you'd be like, hey, I just did what you allowed me to do. I just did it better.
We're just mad we didn't think of it first.
Right?
Well, we didn't create PayPal.
So. Fair enough. There's that, you know, minor detail.
Now, that being said, the way he did his investment would not fly today. All right. The way he went through those investments at that point in time, it is impossible to get through with any type of custodian or even checkbook control or solo 401ks, doesn't matter. You would not be able to get through that type of investment today. But at that point in time when he did it, which was 1998 or 1999, man, our CEO calls it the wild, wild west, right? It was that, we're going to go out and see what happens and no one knows what's going on.
I think something you said resonates with me. Resonates with a lot of listeners is there's a lot of people who like want to get started in real estate or investing in something outside of the stock market, especially now. I feel like it's like every other call I have, but they don't think they have the money, and they do. It's just not in the right type of account that allows them to utilize that money. Right. So I just, man, I don't know how to, I want to tell more people about self-directed IRAs. So I want everyone, I feel like there should be a class for like in college, like how to grow your wealth. It's like a safe force savings that you can tax-free, like, come on.
So one of the best things, guys, is especially out there nowadays, leverage YouTube. God, you can learn a whole language just watching YouTube and never take a class. You really can. But Quest, like Chris was saying earlier, we have so much education out there. If you go to our channel, you'll see that there's a lot of short classes and long classes that go through everything that you're talking about, Lauren. And you can schedule a consultation with any one of our IRA specialists free at any point in time. And they can go through those type of things without selling you anything. None of our IRA specialists get a commission or anything along those lines for setting up accounts or moving. So they don't have any skin in the game, right? They're there just to actually give you good info.
And I think the other component to it is once people get it set up, it's you need to do something with it. You can't just let it sit there because stat in the past, I forget, of how much money just sitting there.
Yeah. So just at Quest alone, believe it or not, we have over $500 million. But if we look at the US wide, it's somewhere right around 28 trillion or 26 trillion. It fluctuates. Just
uninvested sitting there.
Correct.
Ooh, dying.
So at Quest, right? We're a little fish in this big old pond. We got $500 million. Imagine that, just for $500 million.
What percentage overall is that just sitting there? Just out of curiosity.
So we have right around $2.5 billion in assets. So if we do the math, 13%.
It's like you, Chris, like math. Yeah,
it's 20%. $500 million or $2.5 billion is 20%, one-fifth. Yeah, that's
pretty crazy.
That's a lot. Yeah.
It is. So.
Probably why you're having Quest Expo.
Yeah. So our expo is right around the corner too, guys. So if you haven't gotten your tickets, let me know. I can help you get in. It'll be a great event too. So
yeah, no, we're going, we're sponsoring. We will be there. You'll be there?
Absolutely.
Okay. We'll get to meet.
Speak on like 40 different topics.
So will you be dressed as the pink pig?
All right. So if you've ever been to our Quest Expo, people don't know this, but I was the pig for the very first expo.
Oh, I did not know this.
I did not
I
know
just
that
found
either.
Out the pig was the thing.
I was saying it as a joke, but
no one knew that. But it's because what ended up happening is we let someone else go as the pig for like 2 or 3 minutes, but that costume is so hot, so sweaty, and it's so gross. After that, no one else wanted to wear it. And I was like, dude, someone has to just go out there. So I sucked it up and I put on this sweat, someone else's sweaty pig outfit, shook hands and was all crazy and wild. We learned
and
our lesson.
And your guys' like mascot logo, everything, just so people who are listening.
Yeah, yeah. So we had Questy the pig. So
Questy the pig. There you go.
So can you just, you know, give a little plug about like everything? Because Quest Expo, I mean, I went, you know, pre-COVID to one of the events and there was a lot of people there and it is on every aspect you can possibly think about, I believe, in real estate.
Yeah. So,
yeah. So one of the unique things about the Quest Expo is you got to remember, guys, we're a retirement company. So we don't really have anything to sell you. That means any speakers we have going up there, they're not allowed to sell their programs or anything like that. They're strictly there to give you education, right? So it's a great safe place if you're either a brand new investor or an experienced investor to come in and learn a new topic or meet your new business partner. This is also why we bring in, I think, God, we have 38 or 39 different vendors. And we don't try to bring in like 30 of those vendors being lenders. Like that doesn't work. Everyone wants something different and needs something different. Lastly, and guys, I'm ex-military. Look, I got my whiskey right behind me. We have an open bar. All right. So not only can you get great information, you can meet new business partners, meet new vendors, right? It's a safe place to where you're not being sold a coaching program, you know, or anything along those lines, right? Because we've all been there. Come have a beer, meet so many other investors. In 2019, which is the one that I think you went to, Chris, was we had 1,100 people at the peak there at one point in time. 1,100 people. So it's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, most conferences you go to are more catered to a specific topic and there might be 200-300 people there. You know, if you hit 400-500, that's like good. And I was there and like I said, I thought the number was over 1,000. It was just, it's like overwhelming in a sense of like, wow, there's like a lot of people, like so much opportunity just to network and meet people and also share stories or hear what other people are doing. So it's a great opportunity for people and it's, you know, centrally located and, you know, kind of down in Texas. So it's kind of, you know, whichever coast you're coming from or wherever you're coming from, you can get there and probably, you know, pretty much under 3 hours.
Yeah.
And when, want to give the details on when that is, just in case if anyone's listening, they, you know.
Yeah. So the expo is on September 23rd through the 25th. I have to look at, if you look at my calendar.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah. So it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
At first I didn't understand, but now I get it. So, because most people probably are working during the week, I'm assuming is why.
Yeah.
So in Houston.
Yep. It's going to be in Houston. It's going to be at, is it City Center? Is that what they call it? I think.
Yep.
So, but yeah, it's a big venue. It's kind of connected to a mall. So what's nice about that too, is if you just need to get away to get some just cheap food, boom, you can do that. So.
Awesome. Well, any final thoughts?
Honestly, guys, my biggest thing I always, as a takeaway, is just get started. Notice I can talk.
That's going to be my question. What would be your one action you would recommend someone take if they listen to this episode, they want to invest in real estate, they have, you know, a 401k with their employer. What is the action? I always feel like we want to give action steps for people to take rather than just like a ton of education. So what action can they take today?
Get out of the analysis paralysis mode. Too many of us, so there's too much, I'm going to say there's too much information out there to some degree that can become overwhelming. And a lot of times in the real estate space, the people that take action and just do the deal, listen to your coaches, listen to the group that's there to help you out. Let us help you set up a self-directed IRA to buy a note, to do a loan, to invest into some form of real estate. We're here to help you guys out free, absolutely free. Chris is here to help you. Lauren's here to help you. All of us are here to walk you through those motions at no cost to you, right? And I think that's the biggest thing is people don't take advantage of it. They get scared. They get stuck in just overanalyzing everything. And they want to know, well, what's IRS publication says this? Well, I'll tell you, guess what? IRS publication 401A on page 35 says you can do XYZ and you still don't make a decision, right? Just do it, right? Do the Shia LaBeouf meme. Just do it.
It's Nike's on to something.
That or they're looking for the perfect deal. And it
doesn't
like,
exist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
well, I kind of feel like until you set up an account, like set up the funds in a way that they're able to be accessed to invest in something, nothing's going to be perfect because if it is perfect, you're hustling to try to get everything in place so that you can fund whatever deal. So I kind of feel like you set yourself up for failure if you don't set up the account first and then start looking for the deal.
I love that thought. You know, get the IRA set up. Yeah. Remember, guys, at least at Quest, we don't have account minimums, so we can easily get your account set up and then figure out the details. It doesn't.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Derek, for joining us today, talking and helping educate our audience on what a self-directed IRA is, how it is a powerful investment vehicle for people, and who can utilize it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Lauren. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah. Thank you. And Lauren, we'll see you down in Houston, you know, next month. Unfortunately, I can't be down there. I have a family member's wedding that weekend, but you know,
here's a question about the expo. So my colleague and I, my colleague who's joining me, two of them, one of them was asked, we were asking, the second night is a cowboy casino night. Now, does that mean people will be dressed up in cowboy attire? It was a debate we had.
So yes and no. All right. There's definitely a lot of people that are be like, I'm just going to show up normally. But man, we have a lot of cowboys, let me tell you. Right.
This is Texas.
Yeah. It's Texas.
Okay. Well, on that note, thank you again for joining us today on this episode of the CWS podcast. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a friend, subscribe, and leave us a review. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you, Derek.
Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show, share with a friend, or subscribe to the show and leave us a review.